to the Rock Chalk Podcast. I'm your host, Danny Mitz. Today is part two of our three-part season finale. We are talking about our favorite moments in basketball for the Jayhawks this season. We have the same cast of characters coming back to talk to us today that we had in our part one. So you'll hear from everybody again, and I'll be back again at the end to wrap up and kind of give my own thoughts about maybe moments that were forgotten, or, you know, if we've caught most of them, then it'll just be me kind of picking out my favorites. But we'll get straight on to the interviews with all the guys.
And we're back here with Derek Knoll, contributor over at Rock Chalk Talk. Derek, what is your best basketball memory from the season?
Well, this is going to be easier to answer and probably maybe actually harder to answer than the football question you asked me a while back. Because there was a lot of highlights in this season, but I'm going to go with the game away to number one Baylor. I think that game got Kansas back into a tie for the conference lead after being down and kind of looking like they weren't going to be able to do it. But they just went into that game and handled Baylor in Baylor's house. Like, that's the biggest game Baylor has ever played on their home court. And Kansas controlled that game from the get-go. I mean, they handled them. And that sort of cemented, again, this team's really special, and it's sort of, to me, I mean, there's a couple of things you can choose during that entire thing, but as a Bookie, scored 23 and grabbed 19 rebounds, and there was nobody that could stop that guy in that game. It's not like that was the only game that he did that either, but against a team that rebounds as well as Baylor, a team that, you know, had as good of a defensive reputation, Doak did whatever he wanted in that thing. And then defensively too, I'm looking at the stats right here just to kind of solidify my ideas. He had 14 defensive rebounds, so he was everywhere in that game. And, you know, that was the game that McCormick fouled out of, so they were looking maybe to ease Doak out of some things, but nope, he had to play 36 minutes in that bad boy, and he dominated every one of them. But that was the day when KU solidified their number one seed, their number one in the conference, the number one in both polls. It proved that they were the best team in the conference and in the nation, I think.
Yeah, I think that was also the day where, you know, Doak really solidified Big 12 Player of the Year, because Baylor, you know, obviously was kind of neck and neck with them for all of those kind of awards. You know, but Kansas having to deal with injuries earlier in the season, you know, in that earlier matchup against Baylor, I think that had a huge effect on that game. And while there are still people that will argue that, well, Baylor was dealing with some injuries in their home game against Kansas, you know, it's, I don't think it was quite to the same extent, and they were still able to play everybody. But just the way that Kansas dominated down low and was able to really disrupt what Baylor was doing up top, especially since Baylor was so hot in coming into that game. That was, you're right, I think that was a turning point to where everyone really realized just how good this Jayhawk team was. And in terms of like lasting moments, them coming off of the court there, you know, after that game with that hard fought win, you know, the fact that they didn't get a chance to play in the Big 12 tournament or in the NCAA tournament, like, that's going to be, I think, the final memory of gigantic wins. Because I think it was also, like, the most difficult game that they had left. It was the biggest test that they probably would have had until, like, the Final Four. And so, or, yeah, you know, maybe even potentially a Big 12 championship rematch. But yeah, I mean, I think that was a very, very good moment for them. And it was definitely, you know, it's hard to really think, you know, what other moments could potentially kind of be defining ones for that team. You can get some earlier, I think, but go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, for me, that showed the toughness, that showed the grit, that showed the determination. And for me, that showed the exact character that you want in a team that's going to go deep in an NCAA tournament. That's what makes this whole not having the tournament so heartbreaking, is the way that they responded in that game, the way they just said, listen, we're better than you. We can do what we want. And, you know, especially when it comes to Doak, nobody has an answer for that dude. Nobody. Like, the entire year, there's a couple of occasions where he was just kind of out of it. But I think you're spot on when you say that cemented his legacy at KU and that Big 12 Player of the Year for sure, because that was a nationally televised game. That was the game day event for that weekend. They did it on the road in what is supposed to be a hostile environment, and it was just like water dripping off a guy's back. He just dominated that thing.
And in a way, you can almost say that's also kind of the minute that Devon Dotson's lasting legacy at Kansas may have actually taken a hit, because, you know, that was probably the biggest game. He had a gigantic game there too, but Marcus Garrett kind of stole the show defensively in that game. And so even though Devon Dotson was very solid defensively, and then Udoka Azubuike just kind of stealing the show offensively, while Devon Dotson was extremely good in that game and honestly was probably just deserving of getting serious consideration for National Player of the Year awards. You know, he kind of got the carpet ripped out from underneath him, because those other guys kind of showed him up in the biggest, or not even showed him up, but overshadowed what he could do, you know, from just a single game standpoint. And that was probably the biggest opportunity for him to kind of audition for those. It's obviously, you know, concerning for him and a little disappointing that he's not going to get the opportunity on the national or on a, like in the tournament, or even in like the NBA draft combine type of stuff to really show what he can do. But, you know, I think that he was absolutely phenomenal in those games and throughout the year. And unfortunately, he just didn't get as many opportunities to be the guy to really showcase that.
Yeah. And another contender for moment of the year or game of the year or basketball, you know, kind of epiphany moment could be also that Dayton game earlier. And that was the game when both Azubuike and Dotson, and maybe some other guys might talk about that later in your conversation, but that Azubuike and Dotson combo in that overtime game down in Hawaii, where they each had, I think, 29-31 or something like that. I don't remember exactly the numbers. That was just probably the greatest two-man show Kansas basketball has put on or put up or displayed for a long time, where two guys just drove their team to victory. Not to say that the other dudes on the court didn't do anything, but those dudes, you know, with even an average or a good or a very good performance from one of those, Kansas loses that game by 10. So,
yeah. I mean, you could almost say that was the best performance by a duo since like Sharon and Aldrich, you know, the year that they were, it was just those two that were like the main guys for that particular team. But, and we got Scott Chasen of Fog.net 24/7 Sports joining me for this basketball portion of the episode here. So, Scott, what is your biggest or your best basketball memory from the year?
There are a few. My guess is you're going to get a lot of kind of two games, which will be Dayton and Baylor, and for obvious reasons. I mean, these were two one seeds that Kansas defeated, one obviously in overtime in the Maui Invitational, and then the other winning at Baylor, a game that was probably a little bit more decisive than the three-point line it ended at. You know, Kansas had some mistakes down the stretch, including that pretty bad turnover and pass by Ochai Agbaji, and Baylor hit some shots to get into it, but it wasn't as back and forth. But, you know, I was just writing a story just like an hour ago or an hour before we recorded this about Devon Dotson's top five moments of his sophomore season. And when I was looking for his best game of the year, you know, that Dayton game stands out, but, you know, he only scored 4 points in the last 5 minutes of regulation, 5 minutes of overtime. So he really faded down the stretch. He also missed the front end of a 1-1 in that time. That left the door open for Dayton to even tie the game. So I didn't think that was his best game, even though his numbers were absolutely startling in that game. He had 31 points, something like five steals, maybe four assists, six rebounds, some combination of those numbers. That may not be exact. It's something like that. But I thought the Kansas State game, when Udoka Azubuike goes down, this is a guy who has been dominant for you and who has come on so strong, and you know you're not going to be able to get a lot out of him. I mean, the second leading scorer in that game was David McCormick, who shot 2-for-7 from the field. For Devon Dotson to put the entire team on his back, to take over in a hostile road environment in a game that got close late, I thought that told you everything you needed to know about his sophomore season. Even though he didn't have a bunch of assists that game, he may have only had one or two, I actually thought that was the best game of Devon Dotson's sophomore year. I thought he controlled it. He didn't fade down the stretch. You know, he had a bunch of games this year, several, I think more than three, where he missed the front end of a 1-on-1 late in the second half in a close game. There were no issues with him late at any time in this Kansas State game. So that's one moment I was thinking of. And then Udoka Azubuike at Baylor. I mean, what a dominant showing, 23 points, 19 rebounds, and just completely flipped the script on his first game.
Yeah, it's actually kind of funny because some of the people I was talking to, you know, like you predicted there, you know, Dayton was a big one and also Baylor was a big one. And that Baylor game was really kind of the game where, you know, both Marcus Garrett kind of defensively kind of made his, you know, final statement there. And Udoka Azubuike, both offensively and defensively down low, made his big statements that kind of, I think that propelled him to Big 12 Player of the Year, you know, and to get that kind of mentions for, you know, for like National Player of the Year. But Devon Dotson, you're right. Like his biggest game was that Kansas State game, just in terms of taking it over individually. And while, you know, unfortunately he didn't get as much of, I think, a boost from that one, you know, like the last game I think that most people paid attention to was that game against Baylor, maybe the game against Texas Tech. Like there were people that were paying attention to that one, but not quite as much, just because of where we were at the end of the season and Kansas had already wrapped up, you know, at least a share of the Big 12 title at that point. And so, you know, Devon Dotson, in terms of national accolades, kind of took a big hit with that Baylor game. And, you know, no matter how much he tried, you know, that phenomenal performance against Kansas State wasn't able to really vault him back up in the national discussions about those types of awards. But you're right. Like, I think that was probably one of his most impressive performances when you take everything into account and kind of what everyone else was able to do. I mean, there wasn't a KU player that scored in double digits in that game. Other than him. So that was just absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, and I mean, think about that. 25 points, and that used to be something that didn't happen a whole lot. Now, Frank Nason kind of screwed everything up because he scored 30 routinely or at least a few times. And before that, you could count the number of times a Bill Self player had scored 30, I think on one or two hands. Like, I think it was only like a couple or a few times because he typically had these balanced teams with talented guys. You know, I just say this about Devon Dotson. I think Devon Dotson will probably leave Kansas as the fourth best point guard Bill Self has had and the owner of the third best individual season for a point guard Bill Self has had. And both of those things sound like slight until you remember that Frank Mason was the National Player of the Year. Devontae Graham, I mean, he didn't have Malik Newman doing it all year. Malik Newman came on late, but Devontae Graham willed Kansas with back-to-back 35-point games at one point to early season victories. That team had problems. That team was thin inside, and Devontae Graham absolutely willed them to victories. And then Sherron Collins, look what he did. Look what Tyshawn Taylor did getting to a Final Four, something that Dotson was robbed of even having the chance to do. So the fact that you could say in 30 games, he probably did more than in an individual season than all but 2 years of the Bill Self era, I actually think that's a pretty powerful compliment of his game. And look, the one thing he was missing was a consistent three-point jumper. He'll get the chance to prove he has that in the NBA.
Well, and I think what you're talking about, like if they had the opportunity to play in the Big 12 tournament and in the NCAA tournament, I think he easily could have gotten to second in terms of season. If they go and win a title, then I think that surpasses even in a single season what Mason did. Like if they go and win the national title this year, I think it's very easy to say that he had the best season as a point guard under Bill Self.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. And so again, that's kind of my point, that think about that in 30 games, because he missed one game due to that hip pointer injury. And say that in 30 games, which included games where he was dealing with an injury, he still was, you know, a top three season for a point guard under Bill Self. And no, totally, if they had gone on to win the national championship, absolutely, I think that certainly catapults him above Graham. And then you can argue, you know, numbers versus production versus whatever when it comes to who had the better season. But yeah, look, I think his jersey retirement case is really fascinating now. I kind of wonder what they'll do with that because he didn't get, obviously, any Big 12 Player of the Year awards from either the media or coaches. Now, he was a consensus second-team All-American, and so maybe that gets him up there. But look, when Devon Dotson came back for his sophomore year, I think everyone knew he was going to be very, very good. I'm not sure people expected him to be this good. And again, that was without a three-point shot. That was really consistent outside of one game, basically. So, I think it was – I would not underrate this year for Devon Dotson. I think a lot of people are both underrating and overrating this year. I think you can find that middle ground and say it was a great year that could have been a historic year.
And we're joined again by Kyle Davis, one of our writers over at Rock Chalk Talk. Kyle, up for us right now, the favorite or the most memorable basketball moment for you for this season?
So this is probably not going to be a common answer, but the fact that I was in the field house for senior day makes it pretty hard to ignore, just because of you've got Doak starting the game with the first 8 or whatever points it was, 10 points. He was absolutely dominant, clinched the Big 12 again, ended the season at Allen Fieldhouse undefeated. Oh no, I guess we had Baylor, but you clinched the whatever the would be on the way to 16 straight games in the season. Doak, just, I don't know if you could have had a more fitting way for him to end his career there. His speech at the end of the night was great. So just senior day is going to be really hard to top in terms of a memory, especially just being there in the atmosphere of the field house. It's going to be really tough to beat. I know there's the title game against Dayton and Maui was obviously a big one. I was actually also at the KUK State game, although I wouldn't have said the brawl. I would have actually said Christian Brown going nuts. It was really fun to see as a Kansas kid in that game, and I still feel bad for him that he was completely overshadowed in that game by what was to come after that. But just the totality again of senior night, clinching the Big 12, Doak just having a historic game by his standards, and just a way to end, it was almost perfect.
Yeah, I mean, like you're saying, there's a lot of moments that you could pick. And I don't know that senior night would have honestly been one of my top moments, not necessarily because it's not that memorable, but just because there's been so many opportunities. And when you're trying to think of like one moment to kind of define, the entire season, it's hard for it to be any one particular game. But I think it's also kind of appropriate in a season where we didn't have a Big 12 tournament, we didn't have an NCAA tournament. The lasting memories that you're going to get are going to be kind of those big moments that happen at the end that kind of, end the careers of those kinds of guys. I mean, it was Devon Dotson's last game, and while his best game was probably the game prior to that against Kansas State, it was still a fairly good game for him, but it was definitely Doak's night that night. That went a long way, I think, to pushing him forward as, the Big 12 player of the year, with him just going off on the tail of that Baylor game, just 3 games prior to that. And so it was definitely a huge night for him. And obviously a guy that's been there for 4 years, but really only been able to play significantly in 2 of those years. It's hard to not make that night all about him and to really come away from that as one of the main things you remember. So, any other moments that were kind of in the running for you there?
Yeah, they're kind of, as you go through, there was throughout the season, like you mentioned, there was kind of the different peaks that kind of let you understand what this team was going to be about. I mean, you start off the season in Duke. There's a lot of it's very weird because while you never want to open the season on a loss, especially to Duke, like they turned the ball over so bad and just looked so unorganized, yet should have won the game. You have this weird optimism sense. You go to Maui and win, and that's just like, okay, this team is legitimate because Dayton is, which proved out to be very, very worthy of the performance they put up there. I think the game against West Virginia in Morgantown when Marcus Garrett defensively went off was one of those. It doesn't matter the situation and how bad this team plays in a half. They're never out of a game, and you always expect them to come back. That's when you get that confidence. Obviously, the Baylor game in Waco when they got revenge is mighty. And then it just seems like senior day was the icing on the cake for the season. And that was the point where it's just like, okay, they've reached that mark that I don't know if anyone, I think the stakes were high this year and the bar was high, but that was kind of the defining moment of, okay, they made it, even though that was not the last game. That was kind of the way to go out. So, yeah, I think Maui would have to be in there. I think Marcus Garrett's performance against West Virginia really stands out, and just how they gutted out that win. And because I think that's a lot of them you can look at is just how you gutted out wins. And obviously the Baylor game in Waco was a fantastic one.
Yeah. There's, like I said, there's a lot of moments just with how good this team was. And, you know, it was one of those things kind of underrated. And, you know, each of the losses that Kansas had came because of a huge injury, like a huge missing piece because of an injury. You know, with Duke, it being because of Isaiah Moss, Villanova because of Marcus Garrett's injury. And then, and then Baylor because of Devon Dotson's injury. So you had three gigantic injuries in the back or in the backcourt there that really kind of set the tone for those games. And in each of those games, not the Baylor game because Devon Dotson was gone for so long. It was causing so many problems, but they still had a good opportunity to win each of those games, despite the fact that they were missing, you know, a key piece of the team. So, it's just a huge testament to the entire team. And really, you're, like you said, kind of good memories all around, a lot to take away. It's just a shame that this team didn't get an opportunity to win a national title, in the NCAA tournament that ended up getting canceled. So. I'm joined again by Jesse Newell, the Kansas City Star. Jesse, want to get your either favorite or most memorable moment from the basketball season for Kansas. I know there was a lot of possibilities here, so I'm actually kind of interested to see which one jumps out the most to you.
Yeah, I think for me, the one that stands out most, just in terms of fun games to watch, entertainment value, and obviously looking back, obviously it played well over time. That championship game against Dayton in the Maui Invitational, it was spectacular. And I love those games just because, you know, you get the NCAA tournament and there's just so many nerves and everybody's so tight and the atmosphere is not like normal and people are cheering for the upset. And sometimes I just feel like you don't maybe get the players' best performances. You kind of get their scared performances. And even the first two rounds, you know, a team like Kansas, there's really not much to gain from those games. You're just trying to basically survive and move on so you can get to more important moments down the stretch. But in Maui, like, everybody's in paradise. Everybody's in a good mood. It's a low ceiling on the gym. It's a really hot ticket to get in. And so everybody's happy to be there. And there's so much potential with the season. And we didn't know what Dayton was going to be at the time. Obviously, we learned that over the course of the season that was very much a top 10 opponent. But Toppin was taking over the tournament. Dotson and Azubuki played great in that game. And those two teams has really battled and exchanged punches back and forth. And it was coaching that was involved. There wasn't much scouting, which made it a fun game both sides. You know, teams were scoring a little bit easier than they would if they had a little bit more time to prepare. But those games, those championship games in Maui, I remember the Duke-Kansas one from 8 years ago. And then that one, obviously, KU versus Dayton. Dayton has an amazing fan base. They brought a bunch of people to Maui as well. I think that was just a high point of the entire season. Obviously, for Kansas to get that win was important for them. But just from an entertainment value and seeing those two coaches go at it and those three great players go at it. I think there was nothing better this entire Kansas season than watching that scene and just seeing that unfold in front of a crowd that was so happy and so excited to see basketball and also see that in paradise.
Yeah, I mean, you could almost cheat and say the entire Maui Invitational just because, you know, there was two games. Obviously, you had the game against Chaminade, but the two games that you got after that against BYU and Dayton, I think coming into the season, you know, if you had told me that those would have been the two matchups, I would have been surprised by both of them, like just looking at the bracket and kind of preseason expectations. But what we got to see were two very high quality matchups. And you know, Kansas just completely, you know, I guess destroying a BYU team that was extremely hot prior to that night from three and really kind of showing what they can do against a team that's that hot offensively. And then that game against Dayton, just, you know, taking the best shot from a team that was a lot better, I think, than anyone could have expected at that point. And that game was a launching point not only for Kansas, but also for Dayton for that season. Like you said, that's the kind of matchup that you would expect to see, like, in the Elite Eight or even, like, a Final Four or championship game type of matchup where you have two high-quality teams without a ton of time to really kind of do the full scouting report, which is why I think it's more of like an Elite Eight as opposed to a Final Four. But really kind of just both teams doing what they do best, you know, minimal amount of scouting to really try to, you know, kind of, I guess, cheese the system or game plan over, you know, what kind of strength or weaknesses there might be there. You really just kind of get the true evaluation of what those teams are able to do when they are playing their system the best they possibly could. And, you know, Dayton gave them everything they could handle. It was an absolutely fantastic game. Yeah, I agree. It was definitely one of the highlights. Like, if I go back and think of, you know, the top three or four moments of the season, you know, that's one of them. Probably that game in Waco against Baylor is another one of them. And then it's hard to not, you know, think about senior night against TCU, just because of obviously the seniors and, you know, the final home performance for Devon Dotson as well. But yeah, I mean, that one definitely jumps to mind. Anything specific about that game though? You know, I don't even remember actually if Obi Toppin was matching up with Doak specifically.
No,
or if there was some other matchup from that game that really jumped out to you.
Yeah, KU put Ochai Agbaji on him, if you remember. So they countered him. Right. They countered him with a guard for most of the game. But it was fascinating. It's one of those rare times, and I mean, you love this as a sports writer, but there was so much to write about that I picked one angle, and then I wrote a couple of days later about five other angles that I kind of thought about writing about. And at those small venues, too, you can hear what Bill Self is saying. You can hear what emotions to his team, so you can get a little bit more insight. So I wrote a story about five things you might have missed from the Maui Invitational. It was just one of those games that was fascinating both sides. And then, like, when you went back and rewatched, along with some of the information you get in the moment, you kind of even appreciated more what was happening in the moment and could kind of go back and reflect just how nuanced this game is and what Bill Self is doing in these chess matches. And along those lines, if I was going to pick a 1B, obviously it would be that KU-Baylor matchup in Waco. And the same sort of thing, I just felt like for Kansas, they exercised all the demons. You know what I mean? Like the first game, Baylor sagged off Marcus Garrett and didn't guard him, and that's how they had success defensively. KU countered that in the second game. They ran all those middle ball screens, kept the ball in the middle, and made Marcus Garrett a passer. You know, it's like it's just like the point and then counterpoint. It's like everything in the season had built up to that moment, and KU delivered in that moment with not only great execution and great play from certain players, but also great coaching and kind of Bill Self rising up to that moment on that very, very rare instance where he got out-coached in the first game by Scott Drew at Allen Fieldhouse. So obviously that one, I think, opened everyone's eyes in the entire nation to, hey, this Kansas team is the number one team in the nation. And in a season where a lot of people say, hey, there's really no favorite, Kansas should be considered the favorite.
Yeah, I don't even know that you could say he got out-coached in the first game, because Devon Dotson dealing with that hip pointer that happened really early in that game, you know, it caused lots of issues for them to – not only were they able to do that to Marcus Garrett, but there wasn't then Dotson on the other side of the offense, you know, being able to kind of help counteract that, to find another way, you know, to have that additional weapon to go ahead and attack with. So, yeah, they had a very good game plan that worked, but I think it worked extremely well because there wasn't that extra piece in Dotson at full strength being able to help really counteract what they were doing there. And obviously when it worked so well in the first game, you kind of have to double down on it in the second game and then try to make an adjustment after the fact. You can't like proactively, you know, try to come up with some other kind of game plan when it worked so well for you in the first game. And so it was just a matter of, you know, they weren't able to then adjust to the adjustment that Self was able to make in that second game. Although, you know, they did make that big run at the end that they, you know, almost came all the way back from. And so, you know, that second game was, I think, most memorable to me, not only because it was obviously Kansas taking control of the Big 12 race at that point, you know, but it was honestly, you know, seeing a coach who I think gets kind of the short end of the stick, and Scott Drew, he doesn't get acknowledgement for how good of a team he typically has, you know, and how good of a coaching job he typically does. But he was able to make the kind of adjustments to show just how good of a coach he is too. But Bill Self able to really pull that out on the road and show why he is obviously the best coach in the Big 12. And honestly, one of the, you know, top, I think, three or four coaches in the nation as it stands right now, really able to kind of display that against another underrated coach, I think, in the Big 12.
Yeah, I agree. And listen, that was going to be KU's toughest game of the season the rest of the way. I mean, Baylor was the number one team in the nation playing on its home court. So for KU to, you know, I'm not Mr. Guy that's going to say head-to-head is the end-all be-all, but obviously for KU to pass that test, win that game, and again, would have won it convincingly if they hadn't turned it over so much in the last 2 minutes and really, you know, had a lot of difficulties even get the ball in bounds there, and Baylor hitting a couple very tough shots at the end. They would have won that game convincingly, and I had obviously, you know, I'm patting my own back here, obviously, but I had been saying for a long time KU was the best team in the nation pretty clearly, and I think that basically spoke to it for the rest of America that when KU won that game, they were the clear number one in almost everybody's mind.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and like you said, it was probably going to be the toughest game because even by situation, you know, the fact like they had to have that game to not be behind the eight ball for the Big 12. You know, like that, they needed that game in order to get the overall number one to try to set themselves as up, you know, as best as they possibly could for the NCAA tournament. Even if they had gotten to like a championship game, if it, you know, if it had been against Baylor or Dayton or anything like that, I don't know. Obviously, the enormity of the situation being the final game of the season would have been huge, but I don't know that it would have been as difficult, you know, in the entire totality of everything, you know, as it was to go on the road in a hostile environment to a team, you know, in Baylor who had beaten you so handily before that. You know, so after they get that win, I think it kind of helps them to really coast through, you know, until they were able to get to the NCAA tournament. I mean, like even the Big 12 championship wouldn't have been quite as important, because by that point, I think they had already locked up the overall number one, even if they had lost that game. So,
yeah, I agree. But obviously, the home court advantage is going to get you 3 or 4 points. And Baylor, they were going to be a Final Four favorite. So even if KU matched up with them again in the Big 12 tournament or the NCAA tournament, that would have been a, quote, easier game. I mean, even with circumstances or nerves or whatever, you're not going to dock KU 3 or 4 points. So for KU to come through in that game with all the stakes on the line, including making those adjustments, I thought that was a great performance as well.
Yep, definitely. We're joined again by Brendan Brzezinski, contributor over at Rock Chalk Talk, and also the one of the afternoon hosts over on 580 over in Topeka. Brendan, the most memorable or your favorite memory from what was a very eventful basketball season?
You know, this is so tough because KU was, I mean, the best team in the country, and you can go through so many different games and think of big moments throughout the year, and I'm sure a lot of answers would be against Dayton in Maui. I think that's an obvious answer. Senior night is always a really special night. That's one of my favorite nights of the year every year. But I think for me, it comes down to two games. I think two games that they come into one. It's the two games against West Virginia this year. And I would count those as two, as one individual moment, because it's a team that even when they're bad, I mean, you remember the 2018-19 season, that terrible West Virginia team beat KU in Morgantown, should not have lost the game for Kansas. But it's a team that always gives KU struggles at home and on the road. And it was just a perfect example of what this KU team was and how tough they were, because toughness has been an issue, or not an issue, I don't want to phrase it like that, but that's something that has been such a credo for KU basketball for forever under Bill Self. But in the last 2 years specifically, like, you know, last year got the whole soft treatment and Self told the Final Four team that 2 years ago, but this team was tough and hard-nosed from the beginning. And you think of the game at home against West Virginia, and you think of a gritty effort from everybody on the floor, and you think of the gritty effort from Christian Brown, who was so good early on in January this year. And, you know, he played so well against West Virginia, and he played the game at the end of January against K-State where he was awesome. But it was just that grittiness. And it was the same thing in Morgantown, too, in that game. When, I mean, you hold a team scoreless for over 5 minutes, that's remarkable in and of its own right. But when you do it at the end of a game, in a conference game against a tournament team that always gives you a fight, if not beats you at their place, and you hold them scoreless for over 5 minutes, I mean, that is remarkable. And West Virginia, I wasn't as high on them throughout the year as some people were, because I figured a team that has no good guards probably can't be that great. But it was still a good team. They were a shoo-in for what would have been an NCAA tournament this year. But you just saw so much toughness from KU. You saw it from Doak. He didn't have to score a lot to show toughness and to show a great game. Marcus Garrett obviously was tremendous, because Marcus Garrett is just tremendous all the time. And you saw toughness from Devon Dotson too, and everyone mixed in. And that was sort of the, you know, you think of certain moments from this year as the big highlight. Once again, you mentioned Maui or the game against Baylor in Waco especially. But those games against West Virginia in particular were kind of the, you know, the iconic moments for me, in the sense that KU was going to play defense better than anyone. They were going to defend you hard. They were going to be tough. And they were essentially going to go full boa constrictor. And by the end of the game, you just couldn't keep up with the athletes. And I think that second game, especially against West Virginia, was kind of the perfect representation of that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, definitely. You know, especially since that first one, like West Virginia was really surprising people, I think, you know, with the way that Oscar Tshiebwe had really come on, and, you know, coming to Allen Fieldhouse and giving them such a game. Obviously Kansas going ahead and finishing it off at the end and winning, but like I think a lot of people, myself included, were probably more impressed with West Virginia after that game than Kansas. And as the season went on, you started to realize that, you know, that West Virginia was a very dangerous team, but it was still fairly impressed with the way Kansas was able to handle them in that first game. And then they go down to West Virginia, out to Morgantown and really kind of shut down everything that West Virginia wanted to do. Derek Culver being held to 6 points really just showed how good defensively, you know, because up to that point, West Virginia had not lost at home, if I remember correctly. And so it was, you know, it was the first home loss for West Virginia the entire year. And they were a completely different team at home than they were on the road. And so to be able to go in and shut down Derek Culver and to really be able to exert their will at that point. And yes, it was still fairly close, but West Virginia didn't score 50 points. You know, Kansas essentially put that one away pretty early. I would say with about 7 or 8 minutes left, it was fairly certain that Kansas was going to go ahead and win the game. It was just a matter of what the final score was going to be. And so, you know, to see Udoka Azubuike defensively be so successful in that game, even though he wasn't able to get much offensively going, it really kind of kickstarted a lot of the push for defensive player of the year in the Big 12 for both Marcus Garrett and for Udoka Azubuike. They both had phenomenal defensive performances there.
Yeah, they were tremendous. And Garrett especially, self talked about this, especially at the end of the year, a couple of times where he said, you can point back to big games throughout the year and you can see when Marcus Garrett makes a big defensive player, makes a steal, the game changes. And that was the prime example of that against West Virginia. He had the 2 possessions in a row late in the second half where he ripped the ball away back near midcourt, led the break, and it was pretty much over from that point. And I think that also kind of showed just how so many different guys affected and impacted this KU team this year. You go back to the first game, the game at home at Allen Fieldhouse, and it's Christian Brown who steps in, and you think, okay, well, he was playing minimal minutes to start the year. Now he comes in this really tough game against a good West Virginia team, a tough West Virginia team, and he looks as poised as a senior, and he's in just his 12th game at KU or whatever it is, 14th game. And then you have the game in Morgantown where Doak doesn't need to score to make an impact. Dotson does his thing. Garrett is tremendous. You get enough. The big three by Isaiah Moss in the corner, that's one of the biggest shots of the year. That was a hype video at Allen Fieldhouse shot for the rest of the season with how big that was. KU didn't shoot the ball well in that game. So it was just sort of an entire amalgamation of the various things that KU needed to click, all clicking at once and kind of showing how complete this year's team was.
Well, right. And in those two games, you saw two completely different teams. Like, you had huge offensive games from Devon Dotson, Marcus Garrett, and Azubuike in the first one at home, and not very much from everyone else. And then in the second game, you had huge defensive games from those three. And Dotson had 15 points, but to be honest, it was a fairly quiet 15 points. He took a lot of shots to be able to get that. I mean, he was only 4 of 13 from the field, and he had free throws to really kind of bump the rest of that up. But the big offensive threat was Isaiah Moss in that game, and everyone else was playing phenomenal defense to will them to a win there. So you saw Kansas win against a fairly dangerous team in both situations, but doing it completely differently, which honestly was kind of the definition of this team this year, that they were able to win in so many different ways with so many different people filling those different roles. It was impressive to watch. And I'm joined again by Mike Plank, our editor-in-chief over at Rock Chalk Talk. Mike, the next thing I have for you, the your favorite or the most memorable moment from the basketball season. I know that the football is your, you know, the main KU sport that you are super interested in, but obviously you follow basketball as well. With so many different possible moments, which is the one that jumps out to you the most this year?
Oh, so many possible moments. I'm guessing a lot of people are going to say that win against Baylor there towards the end of the year, or possibly the win on the road at West Virginia. I, for one, was kind of partial to the literal beatdown of K-State and Lawrence, but I think my official answer is actually going to be the Maui Invitational early in the season. We played Chaminade, I think, in the first round, but then a pretty convincing victory against BYU. I was at 15 points, I think. And then that Dayton game was a super fun game. And we didn't really know how good Dayton was coming into that. And obviously everybody's talking about Obi Toppin and all the stuff surrounding him. But, it was just it was an early season game too, and it wasn't a conference game. So I didn't really feel the urge to, oh, we got to win this game. And I wasn't really I just sat back and enjoyed it as a college basketball fan. And what a fun game that was, a 90-84 win in overtime for, I think it's our third Maui championship, puts us in a pretty elite tier of teams that have won three or more Mauis. And, I don't know. I think that was probably my favorite part of the basketball season.
Yeah, I can definitely agree with that. I mean, that actually was one that I had my eye on. We had several people talk about Dayton already, but the entire tournament, was definitely, I thought, it didn't, like you said, it didn't develop the way we thought, because, everybody going into that game was, or going into the tournament was expecting a Michigan State, Kansas final there. And it ended up, I think being even a better game than we probably would have gotten Michigan State and Kansas. Dayton was a much better team than a lot of people gave them credit for. They showed that consistently throughout the entire year. I think the craziest thing to think about is if you go by, betting favorites, or if you go by like the expectations for the teams, when we got to, expecting for the NCAA tournament, of the, two games that Kansas had could have been potential national championship or Final Four games in, the games against Baylor, and then the game against Dayton. Like, very easily Kansas played one of the toughest schedules in the nation, and played all of the other legitimate, I think, Final Four contenders throughout the year, except for, depending on what you think of a team like San Diego State. And then, of course, Gonzaga. They didn't end up playing Gonzaga, but, they played several teams that were probably close to Gonzaga's level. But we got to see, that preview against Dayton of what could have been a really good Final Four or national championship game. And, of course, the two great matches against Baylor.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I like the Maui Invitational in general, even when Kansas isn't playing. It's, three games in 3 days against generally, decent quality competition. I don't know. I just like the format, and I like the location. And it's, someday I want to go. It's kind of a dream vacation for me. So, we'll make that happen one of these days. But, this year Kansas had a really good showing and took it home. So, yeah, that was my favorite part of the basketball season.
Yeah, that's definitely a bucket list item to be able to go to something like the Maui Invitational. But you're right. I definitely enjoy that tournament early in the year. It's especially enjoyable when Kansas plays. So I usually wish we can avoid Chaminade, but it seems like, KU being one of the bigger names, and Chaminade being the host of the tournament, they typically like to give them at least one kind of marquee matchup to allow their players, to get a really, really good matchup and really try to test themselves, usually failing miserably, but try to see how they match up with some of the best teams in the nation. I'm joined by David Potter, the senior editor over at Rock Chalk Talk. David, up next for you, your favorite or most memorable moment from the basketball season. There obviously was a lot of possibilities here, so I'm interested to see which one jumps out to you the most.
Yeah, and I'm actually probably going to go with the most obvious one, and that was the win over Baylor in Waco. Just because I think a lot of fans, with good reason, tend to assume that Self and the Jayhawks are going to make it happen and they're going to win the Big 12. I mean, I had pretty much resigned myself to that Baylor team just not losing and running the table by the time that game rolled around, because they had won 23 games in a row. They came into Allen Fieldhouse and really, that game wasn't even particularly close. And now I know Devin Dotson had to leave with that injury, but Baylor was well on the way to winning that game on the road in Allen Fieldhouse even before that happened. So I had just kind of assumed that, this was going to be a second straight year where KU didn't win a Big 12 title. And then they came out, the first half was really close. Then they went on that run the first, I think it was about 10 minutes or so of the second half and got a double digit lead, which, nobody had done that to Baylor, at least since early on in the season, just because their defense was, right up there with KU's. It was really elite, and their offense was good enough to, to really avoid ever facing a hole like that. So when KU took that lead, and then Baylor started making some shots. Jared Butler hit a few big threes down the stretch in that one to make the game a little tighter. But KU was able to put it away and come up with a win on the road at Waco over a team that again had just reeled off 23 straight wins. And at that point, I think I joined the members of the fan base feeling like, yeah, we're not going to give up the lead in the Big 12 now. But that was also what really solidified that this year's team was going to be a lot better than I and maybe some other people thought it was going into the season.
Yeah, I mean, the big question going into the season was obviously three-point shooting, and they got just enough from a bunch of different people. But, that game, I think, was a perfect example of the three-point shooting wasn't phenomenal, but it was just enough to get them to where they needed to be. The one thing that I will actually go ahead and point out there, I think you're misremembering the home game against Baylor, because Tavon Dotson went out late in the first half, just as Baylor was starting to put their run together. Like, he went out with probably about 3 minutes left, and at that point it was, let's see, because he brought them within three, and then ended up leaving almost immediately after that. And that's when Baylor went on the huge run to kind of put it out of reach for the longest time. And KU made a big run in the second half when he tried to come back. And then he ended up just not being able to play very well. And you could tell he was affected the rest of the night. And so I think that's why a lot of people were, I think a little bit more confident than you were going into that game. But it definitely was going to be the biggest game of the year. It was going to decide who was going to win the Big 12, because obviously if Kansas lost, they'd be two games down. With the win, that ended up, bringing them into a tie with Baylor, if I remember correctly. I might have the actual amounts wrong. But, either way, if Baylor won, it was pretty clear that they were going to get at least a share. And if Kansas won, it was most likely that Kansas was going to get at least a share. So, Kansas ended up obviously pulling that one out. Like you said, it was a big deal. But, I definitely do think that was the moment that everybody realized just how dominant the team was and how likely they were to be able to go ahead and get to the national title game, assuming that we had been able to actually go ahead and play it. How amped were you, though, for the possibility of a rematch in the Big 12 championship?
Honestly, I didn't want to play him a third time. This year's Baylor team scared me. I don't know what it was about them, because there's not a lot of star power or anything like that. And unfortunately, pretty much the whole team's coming back next year. But I don't like going up against teams that play that level of defense, especially with a team like this year's KU team, where they figured out how to score as the season went on. It wasn't nearly the issue that it was the year before. But it still wasn't nearly the strong point that the defense was. And I didn't like the possibility of, losing a 53-52 game at the Sprint Center in the Big 12 championship. So I was happy to be done with them. But of course, if they had ended up playing, you never count out Bill Self and you never count out the Jayhawks. It probably would have ended up winning, but I wanted to be done with that Baylor team, especially the way the first game went and just how dominant that defense was.
Yeah, I mean, they were kind of at the point where if they got to that game, it wouldn't have mattered, because they would have been the overall number one seed anyway, at that point. And so there would have been absolutely no pressure for them in that game, I don't think. Obviously, if you get there, you want to win it, but I don't think it would have been that big of a deal. But I definitely was glad, to not have to stress out about that game, although I would have liked to have been able to see, obviously, it's the rest of it. So. All right.
Yeah, and Baylor is also a very physical team. And, if somebody ends up getting hurt in the Big 12 championship game right before the NCAA tournament, that would have been rough too. So just another reason I wasn't really desperate to see them a third time.
And I'm joined again by Steve Fetch, our basketball editor over at Rock Chalk Talk. Fetch, your best or favorite or most memorable moment from a basketball season that obviously didn't get a finish the way we were hoping. But what is it that stands out to you the most from this season?
Yeah, well, I think the thing that stands out the most, if I can go non-positive, I mean, the thing that stands out the most is the fact that it got canceled. The fact that there was no NCAA tournament. I mean, when I think back on this season, that's obviously going to be the first thing that I think of. When I think of, stuff that actually happened on the court, I think you probably have to go to that Baylor game. That was at Baylor, I should say. Obviously, you know, they lost to Baylor in Allen Fieldhouse, which you don't want to remember. But the return, you know, and I remember, you know, you and I talking on the regular episodes as far as how confident we were that they would win and stuff. But it's, you know, it's one thing to be confident and one thing to look at the numbers and everything, and another thing to go out and do it. And the performance they put on that day was really impressive. You know, Udoka Azubuki specifically with the double-double, 23 points. I think he had like 15 rebounds, you know, 11 of 13 from the field, actually 14 rebounds. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Good Lord, 19 rebounds. I'm looking at defensive rebounds and mixing that up with total rebounds. So even better than I thought. So, yeah, just I mean, just an incredible game for the Big 12 Player of the Year. And I think that one kind of cemented his Big 12 Player of the Year candidacy. And obviously, I think, you know, once they won, even though they were tied in the Big 12 standings, I think everyone probably knew that they were going to at least clinch a share of the Big 12 title. And then, of course, they ended up winning it outright. So that one is the winner for me in kind of a narrow win, so to speak, over the Maui Invitational title game against Dayton, which was an incredible game in its own right. Obviously, you know, Dayton went insane from three and still wasn't able to win. And again, you know, it was the big two with Devon Dotson and, you know, Kazubuki leading the way as they did for most of the year. So those were the two, you know, memorable games that stood out for me in a season full of memorable performances.
I'm joined again by Andrew Doty of the High Motor Podcast. Andrew, biggest or favorite moment from the basketball season for this year?
You know, I was telling my wife, she's also a KU alum, she's from the Kansas City area, that I was going on the show, and I told her what we were going to be talking about. And she's like, well, everybody's just going to say the national championship game, aren't they? And I said, yeah. And she asked me if I had a good story. And I think that I do have a decent story from that game. So that
real,
was my
real
fresh
quick,
year.
Go yeah. ahead, definitely, and tell me that story. But I also wanted to get your thoughts on terms of this season, because obviously there was no NCAA tournament, there was no Big 12 tournament. But in terms of this particular season, a big moment from that. But I definitely want to hear your championship story.
From this season, honestly, it was watching Marcus Garrett. Travis Relaford is probably my favorite player. I mean, you know, I was a freshman at Kansas in 2007, 2008. So before that, I wasn't really a KU fan. You know, I like watching Keith Langford and Heinrich and Simeon and all those guys. But when Relaford was there, I think, what was he? He was a freshman in 2008, 2009, if I'm correct on that. And
I believe so.
For whatever reason, I fell in love with Travis Relaford because he played defense. I was never like this defensive kid growing up. I never cared about defense personally, but seeing him play defense did something for me. And yeah, I get like Brady Morningstar was a phenomenal defender, and they've had other really good defenders since then. But Marcus Garrett, whatever corner he turned, I don't know what game specifically I remember where he did it. I think it was the West Virginia game where it clicked with me. And I get that before then people were making comparisons to Travis Relaford, but because I love Travis Relaford so much, I think it was that West Virginia game where he had like three or four steals in the second half. I'm sitting there thinking like this is exactly why I like Travis Relaford, because he doesn't need to be the guy that's going to score 15, 16 points on offense. He can't. Like, he can shoot from the perimeter. He can go to the bucket if he needs to, but this is a guy that's going to lock down your defender. It honestly reminded me of Devontae Graham when he was all over Buddy Hield and Norman. And I think that was in 2015. I think it was February of 2015, maybe. It was that type of a defensive performance where they haven't had that much over the last three or four years. Like, they've had a couple good defenders in here and there, but they've never had a defender like that that completely neutralize the other team's best offensive score. And I know that's not like a particular memory, but it comes with when this team started clicking. I thought this was the best team since 2008. I think I'm probably in the minority on that, but for whatever reason, I think it was also the West Virginia game where something hit me where it said, this team is so good, and that's why it hurt so bad when the tournament was canceled, because I think this was the most complete, the most well-rounded team with the best defender that they've had since 2008. I know that's not a specific memory, but watching Marcus Garrett this season was just a blast, and I'm so glad that he came back. I wasn't that worried about him leaving, but I was so happy he decided to come back.
Yeah, definitely. And you know what? It wasn't what I was thinking about conventionally, but it definitely – I can definitely agree with you watching just how good this team was defensively, and Marcus Garrett specifically. I honestly was a little surprised that he wasn't like the consensus Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year. But the fact that he won the National Player of the Year defensively was definitely well deserved.
Hard to think of a specific memory for this season, because I don't want to say it doesn't matter, because that's diminishing what the players have done, but with some sort of closure, all of these games just didn't, they didn't feel like they mattered looking back on it. Whereas we can sit here and look at all these other seasons that ended in whatever way and look back at specific games and specific performances and say they're memorable. This year, for whatever reason, because it didn't really end, like the season never felt like it ended like the way it has ended forever, that I have a hard time plucking and saying, like, this game, yeah, like going down to Baylor and winning, that was incredible. That was just that was a fun game to watch. But because of how it ended, I have a hard time saying this game, this play, whatever. That's kind of, I think, what hurts for this is it, in my mind, unfortunately, it diminishes everything that happened this season, which sucks. I mean, it sucks that we're never going to see Dotson play again. It sucks that we're never going to see Doak play again, this team play together. That's what kind of hurts for me the most, is that you not only don't have a tournament to play, but now, in my opinion, it diminishes everything that happened during this season, which is it's extremely unfortunate for so many of these guys.
Definitely. So now I have to hear your story about the championship game, though.
Well, now you're playing it up. It's not even that good. I mean, you were in Lawrence for that game, right?
Actually, no, I was over in Topeka. I had graduated just before that. And so I was over in Topeka. I watched it from a bar called Jeremiah Bullfrogs. And actually, I've told the story here on the podcast before, but it was fairly early in the game when Mario Chalmers hit a three, I think, to either tie or take the lead. I ended up celebrating, and I ended up punching one of the neon signs accidentally that was above my head. So I spent the rest of the game sitting there trying to stop it from bleeding. Like, I went down to one of the bouncers and asked for like a Band-Aid, and he brought me one of those little tiny like butterfly Band-Aids that you put on your face, like if you cut your face. that was the only thing they had, apparently. So I spent the entire rest of the game half watching the game, half trying to make sure I didn't pass out from bleeding from my hand so bad.
I thought you were going, when you said you spent the rest of the game, I thought it was going to some sort of like prison thing where you punched it out, and then you said I spent the rest of the game here, and I'm like, wow, this story is going to go off the deep end really quickly. So at least it's better than doing that.
Yeah, exactly.
I have a decent story about the national championship game. Freshman year, the game was on a Monday night. I was super excited, obviously, because of the national championship game, but I wasn't in Lawrence for the national semifinal. I played club baseball and we were in St. Louis, so our whole team watched it there. So I saw what was going on in downtown Lawrence, but I wasn't there for it. So like that piece of it, I was just excited if they were to won to be part of that. Monday night I had a class on Tuesday. It would be the first week of April. So we're pretty far into the semester here. I think there were only, like 3 or 4 more weeks in the semester. We had a final paper due on that Tuesday, not like the final paper, but I think we had 2 or 3 papers due that semester as an English class, and I just didn't do it. Like it was like a 3-month-long project, and I was looking at the calendar saying, KU, you know, if they're in the national championship game, this paper is due the day after. I'm going to roll the dice. And another reason why I did roll the dice was 2 years earlier when I had no plans to go to KU, I bet a buddy that Kansas would win the national championship within 2 years. So I got 2007 and 2008. So I'm like, I'm sitting there thinking, you know what? I'm just going to go all in. I bet this guy $100 that they're going to win. I'm going to go all in on this bet and all in on just not doing this paper. So I'm sitting there Monday watching this game. And yes, like I obviously want Kansas to win the national championship for obvious reasons, but I'm also sitting there when they were down 9 before Sharon got that steal and dished it back, then hit the 3. I think that was at like a minute 49 or a minute 50 on the clock. When that's happening, I'm sitting there like, this sucks that we're going to lose this game. It also sucks that I'm probably going to fail this class because I'm banking on that KU will cancel classes the next day. And I think for whatever reason that we weren't, it was a Tuesday, Thursday class and we weren't supposed to have class on that Thursday. So it's not like with the canceled game, I would have had a week then. So I'm thinking if we get canceled classes, I'll have a full week to actually do this paper. So I'm sitting there down 9 saying, man, this sucks. We're going to lose the national championship game, but it also sucks because I didn't do this paper. Yeah, maybe this game can end at 10 and I can go grab my stuff and pull an all-nighter in the library and put something together that maybe passes this class. So I'm sitting there thinking like this absolutely blows. I'm getting double dipped on this. Obviously they come back and win. After the game, I just bolted from the field house, hopped in some random guy's car. We went, got down to downtown. You know, I went down and had a great time for like an hour, lost my wallet, had to go back and try to find it, couldn't find my wallet. So that was also fun, the whole melee of it. But the fact that Mario Chalmers basically saved my ass in the entire class, that's what sticks with me the most from that national championship game.
That is awesome. That was well worth it.
And that's it for today's panel. You know, they actually hit a lot of the moments that that I thought they were going to hit. There was a couple of them, though. You know, I agree that probably the Maui Invitational or that game against Baylor were probably the two biggest singular moments that could have been picked. But and one of the ones that I was surprised didn't come up at all was the game against Kansas State, the first one where Silvio, you know, picked up the stool, the whole brawl, all of that stuff. You know, I think that's a good thing in that it wasn't one of the most, you know, memorable things that came to mind immediately. But, you know, I also was just kind of shocked given the reaction and kind of all the jokes that kept going the rest of the year that nobody really mentioned it at all. The other one, though, that jumped out to me that nobody mentioned was the season finale against Texas Tech. You know, it was again, one of those where the top four guys, including Ochai Agbaji, had very good games. Yes, Texas Tech made a late run. But that game, you know, the defense kind of willed their way, and Agbaji especially willed their way to, you know, at the end, that win there that clinched the Big 12. Obviously, Baylor was already losing to West Virginia at that point, and by the end of that one, they had already lost. So it wasn't like they absolutely needed that one. But showing the toughness that they did to be able to will out that victory, even though it wasn't one that they necessarily needed, I think it was kind of the epitome of this team this year, you know, just bringing that defense and really just willing their way to a win, even when the other team seemed to be gaining some momentum. So I was very, very happy with that win. It kind of stuck out to me, but I have to agree. I think the Baylor, you know, the game at Baylor and the entire Maui Invitational are bigger moments overall, but those other ones definitely were worth mentioning. So, but that will do it for us here today on this episode, another long one. The final one may not be as long, just because, but it's going to be definitely be just as interesting. I highly encourage you guys to come for our final episode of the season. Again, that doesn't mean that we're going away. We still have plenty of content for you over the summer. You know, I already have a couple episodes already recorded and ready to go. So we will be jumping in next week with actually the first of a series of reviews, you know, books or music or things kind of surrounding sports that I think you guys will find interesting. And so that will be coming up next week to start. But we do have one more episode. It will be about non-football, non-basketball. So, I mean, I guess non-revenue sports or other aspects of the administration. It's quite a collection of random moments and random things to talk about. So I highly recommend you come to that final episode to kind of remember all the other things that Kansas Athletics stands for and all the other things that they do. But if you haven't already, please do go out wherever you get your podcasts, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, any of the other million apps that are out there. You can subscribe to us there so you can get every single episode as soon as it comes out. If you can give us a rating and a review, 5 stars, nice comments would be absolutely great. If not, just let us know what it is we can be doing better. We do bring this podcast to you guys for your entertainment to get you all the information that you need. So if you ever have any comments for us, any questions, suggestions, people you want to try to interview, anything like that, you can contact me on Twitter at RockChalkPod. You can email me at RockChalkPodcast@gmail.com. You can also contact Fetch, our basketball editor, on Twitter as well, at RockChalkTalk, for any other kind of suggestions there as well. But thank you guys so much for listening to this. It's been a fantastic year. We'll be back with you one more time this week, but we will catch you guys next time on the Rock Chalk Podcast.